Welcome back to the America Uncomplicated podcast. This will be episode number 3, which I am entitling Trump Slides Left, What Happened, and the UN. So that title there ought to tell you where we're going to kind of go with this. I was a little tardy this week, about one day tardy, for getting up this latest episode because I had a few things I need to take care of yesterday, which was Monday. But here we are. We're back and we're on to episode 3. So let's talk about this first part of Trump sliding left. Some people are a little bit shocked by this, that he has decided to extend the olive branch to the Democrats here on getting an agreement as far as what concerns DACA. I'm not shocked by this. And the reason I am not shocked is because he's a businessman and he wants to get things accomplished. So when he comes out and says that, you know, we're going to stop this DACA business unless Congress can get something done, you know, he wants you to go to work on it now. And I think this is what is inherently wrong with Washington, is because there's all these committee meetings, and then you got to do studies, and then you got to toe the party line, and then you got the minority and the majority whips making sure that everybody toes the party line, and nothing ever gets done. So it doesn't surprise me that he went to the Democrats and said, do you think we can get something done here? And when they said yes, why not hear him out? You know, you're supposed to be doing a job, you know, for us, the citizens. And if they want to help do the job, then let's let them help. You know, and I think what Trump is learning in a way is there is quite the curve here of how things get done in Washington. There's a learning curve. But I think the more important question is, why don't they just start on things now? We assume they are working on something when they're up there meeting. But I don't know if anybody really knows what they're doing, at least as far as the citizenry is concerned. So as a result, I kind of get where he's coming from is, let's go to work now, not 3 months from now, now. And so it didn't surprise me that he decided to work with the other party. You know, and there is a lot of concern going that was going on last week about, well, this is going to erode his base. This is going to annoy the people that got him elected. But if you think about this in other terms, if he gets his deal done on DACA and they maybe add some of the failed DAPA to it, the parents of these people, he might have just added around 10 million people to his base. So for those that are going to abandon him because he's making a deal with the Democrats, it may outweigh those that may support him because he found out a way to keep them in this country. And I really think the Republicans, they better be careful because they're starting to brand themselves as the party who cannot get anything done while having control of Congress and the presidency. And they are dealing with a businessman who wants to get things done. And whoever's going to help him get things done, that's who he's going to go with. You know, so you still have this big divide here between Trump and the Republican Congress, of which many of them said they could not and would not support him during the election, but he won. And they have to deal with him. And if they are not going to help him, he's going to find people that will. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing here right now. You know, there is there's some parallel here, I think, to what Trump is starting to do. If you know any history of the Clinton presidency, He's sort of pulling a Bill Clinton here, to where he's taking his opponent's policies, making them into his own, and then basically brand that to Congress, to the American people. So he's taken the immigration issue and some of the, I would say, stance that the Democrats have on DACA, DAPA, and other immigration issues as well. And he's basically saying, well, let's just do it this way. And if you guys want to help me, let's just get it done. And so he's kind of pulling a Clinton in that regard. There was a couple other points to this that I thought I would bring up as far as where we're going with the DACA legislation is there's a lot of talk of amnesty versus citizenship, which if you want it in simple layman's terms, you either give it to them, which is amnesty, or you make them earn it, which is citizenship. And both the Republicans and Trump have said that there's going to be no amnesty. We're not going to say if you're here right now and you're illegal, we're just going to give you citizenship. No, you are going to have to earn it. And so time will tell here if how this works out and if Congress can actually get a deal hammered out, because even with if the Democrats all support something and the president says, I support what they are saying, you're still going to need some Republican help to get the thing passed. So time's going to tell on that to see where we go with this. And he's given them that timetable of 6 months. And I think something will probably come about in those 6 months. It just depends on, who wants to work with him. The Democrats come out of that meeting and said a deal is done. And Trump said, nah, deal's not done yet. We're just talking. So we'll see how this plays out. Okay, so let's move on to the next thing here. So I mentioned in the last episode I was going to get Hillary's book, What Happened. I did. And I've been listening to it. And I'm almost done with it as of this moment in time. And so here's my take on it. Is there are some good points, that I didn't think about. And she makes a big deal of the fact that she was the first woman nominee for president of a major party. She could have been the first woman president. And she goes into a lot of talk on women's rights and the glass ceiling, and things in that regard. But the overwhelming theme that I'm seeing in this book is that she is still in attack mode. And it's not necessarily about her. She's still criticizing Trump and the way he campaigned, like extensively. And she says that was in very big contrast to her by the rules campaign. And when I heard that, I got to thinking, okay, so where's the rule book? Could I get a copy of the rule book? Can anybody get a copy of the rule book? And it just seems kind of like an excuse to me. I mean, you can make up your own opinion on that one. But I believe also she's still in denial over why the media made the email controversy such a big issue. And she just doesn't understand why that kept coming up and coming up and coming up. And, just my opinion for what it's worth, we never really got a valid answer. Why did you delete them? I mean, I don't think anybody really has a valid answer. And then occasionally over time, these emails just sort of pop up. They find more, which, I mean, for crying out loud, one of them was on Huma Abedin's laptop. And she's married to Anthony Weiner, which that was a whole nother situation. So I think if she would just have given her opinion and really explained it, instead, and stuck to herself and told it from her perspective instead of this random criticism that occasionally comes out, whether it's directed at Bernie, whether it's directed at Trump, I really think this would have been a pretty informative book. She describes within it a normal day in the campaign. That was kind of interesting to listen to. She talked in one section a lot about debate prep and how hard debate prep is. And I got to thinking, well, I guess she forgot they gave her the answers to some of the questions. But hearing her talk about it and what they go through, and the guy that played Trump and studied his mannerisms, it was kind of an interesting section of that book that I, really enjoyed. But I think she is still having a hard time accepting the fact that her entire organization and herself was outsmarted by Trump and by, at the end, Bannon. And I think they're having a hard time with that, or she's having a hard time with that. She mentions Bill several times during the book, and said when she was talking to him about running, he said, well, you might lose. And so I think she still can't really believe that she lost. And in an NPR interview the other day, she basically alluded to the fact that she would challenge the election results if the mechanism was available. Now, I remember when they asked then candidate Trump if he would accept the election results. And he said something to the effect of, I'll take a look at it, and was just chastised over it. So now she goes on NPR, says basically she'd challenge it if the mechanism was available, and nobody's really saying anything. Which to me, you're pulling this double standard here. You can't criticize one without criticizing the other on the same issue and the same statement. But he got blasted for it, and with her, it's more like a novelty thing here. One other thing I'll mention about this book, What Happened, and then we're going to move on here, is she makes several statements that Trump turned this campaign into a reality TV show and is not real happy that he did so. But it worked, and she lost. So, Trump, I think everybody knows, just took the rule book, if there even is a rule book, and threw it out the window and basically wrote his own. And so, there's a lot of animosity still there. She's still ticked off that she lost. But, if you're interested in the book, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. And her reading it is not that bad, because I'm listening to it. And it's got some good stuff in it. I'm not gonna lie about that. But boy, there's a lot of blame game. A lot of blame game going on with that book, but that's okay. That's just kind of how that goes. So there's my review of her book, What Happened, and I can guarantee I probably won't talk about it again. I did read something that said it's possibly the only book cover in the world where the question and the answer is on the cover. It's because it says what happened, and it says Hillary Rodham Clinton. So I thought that was kind of funny. So the two books that I've listened to lately, I referenced Devil's Bargain, which was about Bannon and Trump in the previous episode, and now we've talked about What Happened. I think they're both very good in their own way. It's worth listening to both because you get an idea of where Bannon and the Trump campaign was coming from on their side of the argument to try to win this election, and then you have her side, and it's very contrasting, that's for sure. But they were both very good, in their own way. All right, moving on to the next thing here. Trump was at the UN today, and this was the first speech that he gave before the entire General Assembly. And there's either a lot of, I would say, praise for how he did it, or there's a lot of criticism for how he did it. So, in summation, if you didn't listen to it, or you don't have time to listen to it, and you just want the summary from me, he basically laid these points out that the Iran deal, which on the old podcast, I went into the Iran deal quite extensively, basically said, we will not be renewing that next month, and told that to the entire UN and called them a rogue nation and really called them out. He also said, if we have to, we will destroy North Korea if we have to. And that he is going to put America first in all of the decisions that he makes. And he also mentioned that the leaders of other countries should put their people first as well. But kind of to me, the overarching theme here was we will take care of our friends and allies. But when it comes down to it, we're putting our interests first, as they should with their countries. And, some of the criticism that he's received on this, or is receiving on this, was that he took a message of war to a place of peace, being the UN, and talking about Iran and talking about North Korea. And then he kind of mentioned Venezuela, which I'll get into here in a second with what's going on down there. And folks say, some folks are saying you should not do that. The UN is a place to collaborate, compromise, get things done, and promote peace. But other people are saying the message was direct and it's to the point. You know exactly what the foreign policy of the United States is going to be as long as he is president. And they say that is a good thing because it doesn't give mixed messages. And so he did make a statement that if the righteous many do not confront the wicked few, then evil will triumph. And within that context, he praised Russia and China for their support on the recently passed sanctions against North Korea. But then he basically admonished those two countries for still doing business with North Korea despite all the trouble that they are causing right now. And the nickname that he's given the leader is Rocket Man, which is that's going to catch on, I can guarantee it. But what he basically said in summation on that was, we will act alone against North Korea if needed. And we will turn that place into a parking lot if we have to. And so we'll kind of see how more of the response this week comes out from his speech and what everybody's kind of looking at, maybe either helping us do or whether we're gonna have to go this alone. Now, I did just mention that he referenced Venezuela and the president down there. Here's what's going on. The president, Nicolas Maduro, is becoming more and more authoritarian. And the economy is collapsing. Like, they've got major economic issues down there. And Trump, in his speech to the UN, said, we cannot stand by and watch this happen, not only to a neighbor in the Americas, but also a friend. And he said that we will continue to look to help within a political and diplomatic level. But then he added that we will also look at it at any level that is necessary, which I think the interpretation of that is if we've got to send troops down there to fix it, we will. And so it goes back to a lot of U.S. history of us taking care of the Western Hemisphere. And we're kind of the big brother over here, and Europe needs to stay out of here. So he's just announcing to everybody that, President Maduro is on notice. And he better kind of watch what he's doing. Which the government of Venezuela come out with a statement not too long ago saying that basically chastising Trump's remarks and saying it goes along with his white supremacist feelings. And stuff like that. So we'll see where this all goes. And to conclude here, I thought I'd leave this one for last because this is a doozy. If you remember when Trump said the Trump Tower was being wiretapped during the campaign, and all the media outlets and governmental institutions all said he is nuts, he's off his rocker, and just blasted him for it. Well, new information has come out that the federals were wiretapping their campaign chairman, Paul Manafort. And as a result, they were wiretapping it. And I thought to myself, it is no wonder that nobody trusts anything that anybody really even says anymore. Because after all that, now it comes out that they went to a off the books court supposedly and got the warrant to wiretap him because they knew he was talking to Trump. That's just, to me, that's just unbelievable. But anyway, so this is a pretty short episode. We're at about the 20-minute mark here, so hopefully I did you some justice and talked a little bit about Trump kind of extending the olive branch here to the Democrats, a little bit of Hillary's book, and then what went on at the UN today. It seemed like it was a pretty slow week for news. There wasn't a whole lot that went on, and that was the highlights that I kind of picked. So once again, I'd like to thank you for listening to the third installment of America Uncomplicated. If you'd like to slip on over to the website, americauncomplicated.com, send me an email, make a donation, or just a comment, that would be great. And I will talk to all of you next Monday.